Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio, where faith and reason meet every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m., bringing you a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Cindy wants you to use that
this
microphone.
Okay,
fantabulous.
You.
You're welcome.
Live radio, ladies
and gentlemen.
Live radio.
We're just winging it as we go along here at WCAP Radio. Broadcasting live at the studios here at 980 AM, live streamed on TuneIn and Facebook.com, WCAP.com, 980WCAP.com, that is, and it will be broadcast, podcasted throughout the internet eventually. Tonight's topic is on Beneath the Surface Tonight is what to do when dreams are shattered and hope seems lost. What to do when dreams are shattered and hope seems lost.
That sounds like music lyrics.
It does. It sounds like a, I don't know, a typical country song, I suppose, but that usually has to do with romance. But I'm sure this
I was
going to
say it's
too.
Like a 1970s pop ballad.
Yeah, could be.
Like, we had joy, we had fun.
We had seasons in the sun.
But the hills that we climbed were just seasons out of time.
Out of time?
I think so. I don't know.
Doom, 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 doom.
Yes.
Goodbye, Papa. Please pray for me.
Wait a minute. Right, here's one. Do you remember this?
What? By the way, if anybody at home knows like who did that song, give us a call.
Terry Jack.
Oh, I wanted people at home to do it.
All right, wait, I have another one.
All right, go ahead.
Billy, don't be a hero. Don't be a fool with your life.
Bo Donaldson and Haywood.
We can't
Billy,
stop Cindy.
Don't be a hero.
All
come
right.
Fucking make me your wife. Something
do,
like
do,
that.
Do, 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 do. And as he started to go, she said, Billy, keep your head low.
Oh, Billy, don't be a hero. Come back to me.
Have we changed the topic for the night?
Is that it should have just been 70s music.
70s yeah. Pop music trivia.
All right, well, anyway, you are listening to Beneath the Surface, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah, we're going beneath the surface on 70s pop.
That female voice you heard, of course, is the one and only Cindy from Cindy's Vinyl Vault, who knows every song that was ever written and recorded.
And the artist.
And the artist. And she, of course, with Peter, will be with you at 11 p.m. right here on WCAP Radio. On Cindy's Vinyl Vault.
Woo-hoo.
But, Kent, let us go beneath the surface. Before we do this, Kent, you are Kent.
I am Kent.
Yes, what is it like being Kent Niebuhr?
And
one sentence or less.
So stinking hectic, I will tell you that. Oh,
okay.
My goodness. And my 101 and a half year old grandmother, who passed away back in April, always used to say, I'll rest when I'm dead. And, I think it's genetic because that's the way I'm feeling. I don't think I'm going to rest until I'm dead, and hopefully that's not too terribly soon.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
how about you, Paul? How are you doing?
I'm just the opposite.
You're just the opposite. Yeah. You're underwhelmed.
No, I actually like rest.
Oh, really?
In this life.
You know, if it were transferable, if you could store up rest credits and then inject them into me intravenously, I would take that. I would do that.
All right. Well, there's fulfillments in rest. There's fulfillments in activity. And there's fulfillments in all kinds of things.
There is.
That are in this world, but especially that which transcends this world, of course. Now, I have a feeling we're going to get into some of that as we go along tonight. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. The BTS hotline, again, if you want to get involved, 978-454-4980. Paul Morano with my very special guest tonight, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, on this special topic. And it, I think people can relate to this topic, first of all, across the board. But second of all, now that the holidays are coming closer.
Mm.
Do you disagree?
I agree.
Let me just read the topic one more time and we'll delve into it. What to do when dreams are shattered and hope seems lost? I think this is a universal phenomenon, Kent.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us hide it in certain ways so that the public doesn't know. But I think a lot of people are holding this kind of, at least now and then in their lives, this kind of pain and suffering with them.
Yeah, you know, I don't, for what it's worth, you know, when things are going well in your life, you tend to just be kind of, you know, I don't know if happy-go-lucky is the right word, but you tend to have a pretty positive outlook on things. And when you hit a wall, when something goes wrong, I'll tell you, you know, in those times for me, I'll just be at the supermarket or something like that, and you start to look at other people differently. And what I tend to notice at those times is it almost seems like most people, I want to say, I have done no scientific study here, but my sense, my gut feeling is that most people are kind of hurting to some degree or another.
I don't think there's any question.
They're longing, they're bereft, they're lacking, or they're wounded, or they're just outright wounded, and some people more so than others, and it's, you know, part of you wants to reach out to them and, you know, ask them what's troubling them or what crosses they're carrying.
Isn't it interesting how people, I think that's a universal phenomenon, but people react to that internal wounding differently.
Yeah, sure.
You have the angry folks that lash out and that are bitter, and you have the depressed people.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're the same people. Sometimes they're both angry and depressed.
Yep.
And others sort of just withdraw from life and become radical introverts.
Yeah, you know, I would also add another category to that. You have some people who just become numb, whether it's chemical numb or just psychological numb, and they just don't care about anything, and they're just sort of pleasure seekers. They're just party.
Now,
and it seems like it's to, you know, run from that pain.
Yeah, so some people do that. They try to numb themselves with drugs. Other people, it's food. Other people, it's sex.
Mm-hmm.
Pornography is big today.
Sure.
All of these things, of course, make it worse.
Yeah, and I would say you have to look at even broader. Some people become workaholics.
Workaholics,
right? Some people, you know, they just channel surf. They just watch too much TV.
Become couch potatoes.
Yeah, they get lost. They live vicariously through you know, the shows they see. You know, I don't get to watch any TV ever. And it strikes me, I guess because I don't watch any TV, just because I don't have time, that when I hear people talking about watching TV, if you didn't know any better, it would sound like they're talking about their own personal experiences, their own family, friends, whatever, when they're getting into the drama of some of these shows, right? It's not so obvious, it's not so confusing when they're talking about a comedy or something like that, but when they're talking about a drama, you would almost think they're talking about their own lives. And so I don't know, I'm getting way in over my head here, but it seems to me like people live vicariously through other people's worlds. They retreat from their worlds either because there's too much pain, dissatisfaction, or even just boredom, that they are looking for the antidote, whatever that may be, in other people's lives. I mean, look at the cult of celebrities, things like that, right?
Absolutely.
These are the easy go-to things when you're suffering or unsatisfied, discontent.
All right, let's first look at some of the causes, if you will, for this unsatisfaction, discontent, and I suppose you could say psychological imbalance.
Yeah.
What do you think some of the popular causes? I would say sort of across the board, transculturally and even transhistorically. In other words, according to our nature, but also those that are particular to our day.
I would say, maybe this is too broad a statement, but I would say that it's self-centeredness, if not outright selfishness. So I think people are primarily concerned, you know, you got to look out for number one. In other words, you got to look out for yourself. People are primarily concerned with their own, whether it's security or comfort or success, and then everything else, they will be good to others as long as it doesn't cost them a whole lot. Again, I'm making a very broad statement here. So it's kind of a self-centeredness, maybe even a selfishness, that tends to, I think what happens, how that plays out, is you end up hurting people. People end up hurting each other because they're mostly concerned with themselves not others.
This is the snake bite, if you will, that occurred in the garden.
Yeah.
So this is sort of very common to people. It's it's a universal phenomenon.
Yeah.
But I mean, everybody has a degree of selfishness that we're all wrestling with and trying to rid ourselves of. You know, if you're religious, of course, it's with the help of God's grace. But there are people who are suffering on a greater level than that, a deeper level than that.
Yeah.
And these people sort of have a darkness when they look at their own futures.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's a darkness. There's no insight. There's no what is going to happen to me in the future. What should I do? I don't know where to go from here. Everything looks futile.
So you're saying, I thought you were, at first it sounded like you were just saying the future's unknown, so it's dark. But then you advance to saying there's a pessimism about the future. There's not just being uncomfortable because you can't know the future.
Yeah.
There's also a pessimism about it.
All right, let's talk about both of those. Obviously, they can go together,
sure.
But I suppose they can be distinct.
Yeah.
So you're saying that there could be a darkness as to what my future is and what to do about it, and have an optimism about that?
You could say, you know what? I have no idea what my future is. I don't know what the next 5 minutes is going to hold for me, let alone the next 5 years or five decades.
Right.
But I'm just going to trust that somehow, some way, things are going to work out. I'll be okay.
So then, are you saying that most people, if you ask them, where do you think you'll be 5 years, 10 years from now?
Yeah.
They have a vague mental picture, and they'll articulate that.
Yeah, sort of a roadmap, but not concrete.
True. Now, that's... Would you say that some people don't have that at all? At all?
Well, my sense is that the people who don't have that are the people who are depressed. who are just so caught up in the moment.
And I guess that's the point. So let's focus on that. Those who don't have that at all.
Yeah.
And who feel very stagnant in life and feel like from everything they can see from their psychological viewpoints at the moment, nothing will work.
Right.
Nothing will work.
Right.
All right. So that's where a person is.
Yeah. We all tend to try to say, okay, what are the possible outcomes? Where can I possibly go from here?
Right.
And sometimes you find yourself in a situation, or maybe you have this kind of an outlook on the world that, you know what, I can come up with 2 or 3 or 5 or 20 options, and all of them are horrible. They all stink. There's no way I'm ever going to get out of this alive. Yeah.
There's that.
Yeah.
And there's also those 2 or 3 things in life that that a person always wanted and always assumed they would have.
Yeah.
And once they start getting into middle age, and they passed, the years go by, and they don't get this, the typical
midlife crisis.
Well, I call them the 2 W's if you're a man.
Uh-huh.
Woman and work and woman. If you don't seem to get anywhere in those 2 categories, which are the 2 most basic categories in life other than God, and the years are flying by, and you say to yourself, did life pass me by?
Right.
These folks are part of that category that say, how do I, what good is life now? How do I get out of this?
Yep.
How do I, what sunshine do I look for?
Yeah, exactly.
So how would you respond to that?
I mean, I'm as likely to get down when things are really tough as anybody, but the way I get myself out of it is I have to realize that I am not all-knowing. I'm not omniscient. I don't know the future. I really don't. So what I have to remind myself is things can turn out phenomenally well, right? Right now, I might not envision what that could look like or how I could get there. I might not. I might look at all my options, like the depressed person I talked about before, and say, "Man, I'm trying to play out every possible scenario, and they're all bad." But is that it? Do I just say, "Well, that's it. There's no hope," or do I say, "Okay, I've thought of whatever 5 things." Those are all the things I can think of. And yes, they're all bad. However, what if there are 6 things? What if there are 10 things and a lot of them are good, right? What if there's a way this plays out that knowing what I know now, seeing what I can see now, I can't even conceive of?
Yeah. All right.
But what if they're actually out there?
Now, you say what if. Are you insinuating that there are opportunities, options that other that people don't see?
I'm saying that you can't rule it out.
Yeah.
You cannot rule it out. And, the analogy that I come to as a Catholic is that I think of Christ on the cross, right? That looked pretty grim. When you're nailed to a cross and you're half beaten to death even before you get nailed to the cross, you're bleeding to death and suffocating, and people are spitting on you and slapping you and deriding, insulting you. What's the way out?
Yeah.
How is this going to improve?
Yeah, what kind of hope do you have at that moment?
You can't look at, you can't be in that position and think, I don't know, the Lone Ranger is going to ride over Calvary and swoop in and slay all my foes.
Unless you believe that every ounce of suffering that you're going through in that excruciating moment is for a greater good.
Exactly. And, I'll tell you this story because it's a cute little kid story. So when my son Daniel, who's now 15, he was about 4. And it seemed like my kids all kind of went through a phase where they just had nightmares all the time. And it was, around that age. And Daniel was having these nightmares. And he comes to me one morning and he says, Dad, I'm having all these nightmares. And I said, Daniel, here's what you do. When that monster's coming after you, you just don't even try to run away, because he was saying that he tries to run and the monster always gets him. I said, just stop, turn on that monster and say, you can't harm me because I'm a child of God. And he kind of lit up. He said, I'm going to do that. The next morning he came down to me and, a little 4 or 5 year old kid. And he's like, Dad! I said, what is it, Daniel? And he said, I had a nightmare. Yeah. I did exactly what you told me, and he absolutely killed me.
What?
And I said, And he said, you were wrong. I said, no, Daniel. And I pointed at a crucifix that we had hanging up.
Yeah.
And I said, he was killed also. But what happened 3 days later? So what I remind myself, no matter how bad things are getting, and I've never been nailed to a cross. I've never been lashed to the point where my flesh is half gone. I've never been through what Jesus went through in his passion.
Yeah.
But I've been through some pretty significant suffering, pretty momentous, consequential suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But what I remind myself is that even if this kills me, what's on the other side?
Well, there you go. I mean, that really seems to be the difference there. Because,
yeah.
I mean, those who don't have a religious faith that there's anything on the other side, what would they have to look forward to when life is truly dire?
Right. Right. And so what does that cause us to do with suffering? Suffering is something to be avoided or just waged war upon.
Yes.
At all costs. Yeah.
Or pass the buck. And then somebody else has to suffer.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to suffer. You know,
that's exactly what abortion is all about, right?
Passing the buck to the baby.
Yeah,
right?
I don't want to sacrifice 9 months of my life.
Sure.
Just pass the buck and kill the baby.
A friend of mine was telling me recently
I don't mean to say that every woman thinks in those terms
exactly.
From A to B, but there's a principle there that's at work.
Yeah, an underlying principle. Yeah. A friend of mine who lives in Florida was telling me recently that there's a law down there that if you see someone in distress, in need, something's going on, and you can help them within reason.
Yeah.
You're legally obligated to help them.
Wait a minute. They call it
the Good Samaritan
law. I understand that, but don't you really have to be, injured or something?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the particulars
all
of
right.
the law. But talking about principles,
yeah.
The principle there is, you know, we've all heard the stories about, you know, nobody, there's a mugging or a rape or a murder, and nobody calls the cops because everybody figures someone else will do it.
Yeah.
Right? The people we call heroes are the ones who figure, I can't assume that.
Mm.
I have to help. Because if I don't, what if nobody does?
Right? Let me sort of veer off a little bit and ask you a related question related to this whole question of what to do when dreams are shattered and hope seems lost.
Yeah.
Is it appropriate? Is it productive? Is it good for human beings to have and foster dreams in life? Now, I say that in the context of usually they don't pan out, and usually people are very disappointed. In a second context, that if you're truly a Christian, shouldn't you just have the attitude, Father, may your will be done, whatever that is, without my dreams getting in the way?
You're going to get in trouble with Disney.
Right.
Yeah. Every Disney movie
is about dreams.
Is about
your, coming true.
Your
right,
dreams
right,
coming
right.
true.
Now, that's only in Disney, but answer the question.
And it's not just Disney. I mean, you look around at a lot of pop culture for a very long time, and it's all about people making their dreams come true, especially...
Right. Hallmark movies.
Especially movies that are directed at children. But yeah, you're right. You look at the Lifetime Network or Hallmark or whatever, and
The romance always comes always
exactly.
The happily ever after is a universal theme.
Right.
I know that.
But you know what? Ironically, I guess this is probably changing with the way the culture's been in a long time. But if you thought who's the greatest writer in the in the history of the English language?
Shakespeare.
What is Shakespeare's most famous play?
What would you say it is?
I don't mean just with Shakespeare aficionados and Shakespeare fans, but if you said Shakespeare, if you just went out on the street and said, "Do you know anything that Shakespeare wrote?" I think probably the answer you get most of the time is Romeo and Juliet.
Well, yeah, that's the certainly. That's
maybe you'd get
one,
Hamlet.
Yeah, Hamlet is definitely there. One out of top three.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your third?
I don't know.
Okay, so here's my point, though. Much Ado About Nothing is a comedy.
It is.
Maybe that would be third. Romeo and Juliet is a tragedy.
A tragedy, yeah.
Because they die. They
That's
both
right.
die in the end.
Yes.
Hamlet is a tragedy. Everybody dies in Hamlet, practically. Right? So, and then maybe you get to Much Ado About Nothing. But what if you get to King Lear? Another tragedy, right? Shakespeare is the most brilliant writer in the English language. Well, maybe we'll get calls of people telling me I'm an idiot. But I think it's fair enough to say that you could make the argument that Shakespeare is the best writer in the history of the language.
And his most popular is tragedy.
Tragedies.
Okay. All right. Therefore, what? What do you conclude from that?
What I conclude from that is that there's been a shift in our culture.
Oh, I see.
Away
from,
what do you want to say, appreciating the reality of tragedy?
Mm. Or
towards...
Even recognizing that life is tragic.
Exactly. Yeah. There is tragic... Life is tragic. Life is full of tragedy, even if it ends up being a comedy. And so, I will say this, when you look at Shakespeare plays, Romeo and Juliet would have turned out as a comedy if in the end they didn't die.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And that almost happened. That almost happened. But it's a tragedy because it didn't.
Well, let's think about that for a second. I think you're bringing up an interesting point.
That's my job here, Paul. That's why I get this gig.
In pre-modern times, people were much more open to enjoying tragedy.
I don't know if enjoying is the right word, appreciating.
Appreciating, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. They'd go to a play, right?
Sure.
And why do you go to a play? You want to enjoy something.
Right, right.
Today, in contemporary times, ever since I was born, certainly, and before that, the happily ever after theme, where guy gets the girl gets the guy, they come into money maybe, they live on their farm, which they always wanted to do, or in their city suite, or whatever they want. And they
get the big job.
He or she got the dream job that they always have, and they lived happily, and then it ends. So why has it shifted like that? What about contemporary life disables us or makes us deny tragedy? Like we do today.
I would say the loss of faith or the diminishment of faith is that...
Religious faith.
If we don't have heavenly hope, everything has to happen here. And therefore we can't tolerate tragedy.
So we pretend that it will happen here.
So we get obsessed with dreams.
Yes.
Bali,
this world
dreams.
Yes.
You got to have dreams. And what do we hear? Never give up on your dreams.
Never.
Never, 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 never give up on your dreams.
Wow. And like when I was a kid, I thought like people that said that really knew what they were talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And when I grew up, I realized that it's nonsense.
Yeah, right. It doesn't. Here's my main problem with that.
Yeah.
My main problem is that what dream?
Yes.
The dream I had when I was 5, I should never give up on, or the dream I had when I was 15, or the dream when I had when
yesterday.
I was 40, or right?
Right.
So, in other words, if I'm supposed to be married to my dream from the age of 5 or 10 or 15...
When you lose interest in it, are you supposed to continue to try to go for it?
My brain isn't even fully developed at that age. And as I mature, as I learn more, I'm going to look at the world a little differently.
All right, so then what do people mean by dreams when they say don't give up on your dreams?
We get enslaved to our dreams. We become the subjects of our dreams.
But the dream becomes
a tyrant.
True, but you make a huge point, I think, that we lose interest in our own dreams. So does that mean that we still should work at these dreams we're no longer interested in?
Think about it. We may lose interest in our dreams, but I can tell I'm 50 years old, and there's a small irrational part of my brain that still thinks I'm going to be a rock star or a Major League Baseball player.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah. It's absolutely...
I haven't given up.
I'm not giving up. I'm not putting it on my resume, but...
Ask my wife. I haven't given up being a rock star yet.
Me neither. Ask my wife. Ask my kids. They have to listen to me sing in the car. But the point is...
Yeah,
I take the rock star, the Major League Baseball thing, and that gets compartmentalized for reality.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If I never gave up on the rock star dream, I would be one of those ridiculous looking, I'm not gray haired and I'm not bald yet, but we know the type when you go to a bar or you go to a club and you see this guy who's still trying to be that rock star and he's 70 or whatever, you know? And you're just thinking, that's kind of tragic that he didn't really he couldn't put that in perspective.
All right, then how do we deal with, first of all, what do we do with dreams, and how do we deal with them?
I think dreams are great for a limited amount of time. My dream as a five-year-old probably motivated me to mature to a 10-year-old.
But wait a minute. What do we mean by dreams?
Yeah.
Do people mean what they want to do when they grow up dreams?
Yeah,
dreams?
Right. Then we'd all be ballerinas and firemen or something.
And if dreams did come true, does that mean they come true at 25 years old and then they become untrue at 28?
Yeah.
Like what is the lifespan of a dream?
And how about this? How many times have you heard the story of the person whose dreams came true when they were 25 or 30 or 40,
yep,
and then they looked around and they said, is that it?
Yeah. Well, that usually happens with dreams life.
I got my dream, but here I am.
And I think you're hitting on something extremely important, that if we were only animals, dreams relating to this world could fulfill.
Yeah, right.
You got food, sex, exercise. Yeah. It's pretty fulfilling if you're simply an animal.
Right, right.
Human beings have a transphysical soul that demands much more in order for us to be fulfilled.
Yeah, and so we need the immaterial satisfaction
in order to be fulfilled.
Right. The part of us, we have physical bodies.
Yeah.
We are physical bodies. So we seek those things which benefit the physical body, right? Mm. But do we do it to the exclusion or to the detriment of our souls, of our psyches, right?
Well, basically, that's what people do when they get obsessed or addicted to material things, whether it be food, sex, material goods, or anything else, right?
Right, sure.
Or drugs.
Right. So what they're neglecting...
Too much comfort and too much pleasure is to the detriment of the soul. And as anybody with any experience can tell you, is that people actually get more and more unhappy the more and more pleasure, the more and more comfort they have.
Yeah, I just saw a movie yesterday, the Bohemian Rhapsody movie, the Queen movie.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And that kind of plays out in the movie as well. And I don't think that's a spoiler alert. It's not a main theme. But it's addressed in the movie, you know. You get everything you want.
Mm.
You're surrounded by yes men.
Yeah.
Are you happy?
And the answer was no?
Exactly. Mm. Right. So,
I think a lot of people would think, yeah, but I would be.
I think they do.
They hear all the stories about all these people who have the money, the fame, the fortune,
right,
the women, the alcohol, the drugs or whatever. And they say, boy, if that were me, I would be happy.
Yeah, because I have my head screwed on straight. And
you
give me $100 million, and
right,
I would do the right thing, and I would still be happy. I'd
still
keep everything in perspective and so on and so forth. There was an interesting story done, I don't know, 10 years ago, something like that, and I couldn't tell you all the details. But the upshot of it was this journalist went and looked up the first 10 winners of the lottery in New York State. When the lottery came in, I want to say it was in the 70s.
What did they find?
They were all broke.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, 40 years ago when $1 million was crazy money. Now it's still a lot of money, but what was the Powerball a couple of weeks ago? Like $1.6 billion. So $1 million is chump change. But back in the day, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And these guys won the lottery, won $1 million. And I want to say they said it was within something like 2 years they were broke.
Yeah. Well, of course, that's very rare to win so much money. But let me ask you something that a lot of people have experience with, where the tire hits the road here. What would you say?
I would say where the rubber hits the road.
Regardless.
Okay.
A couple of examples. What would you say right now to the person listening, the woman who just got... just got dumped by her boyfriend of 3 years that she had hopes that they were going to get married, and she's absolutely shattered and heartbroken. Or the guy who just got a divorce and his wife left him because she didn't think he was good enough for her. Or the person who all their lives they dreamed of this one particular line of work, and now they're finally coming to the realization, I can't do it, and I don't know what else to do with my life because I have no skills and I have no job. And I'm very depressed. for those three people and for people like them, what would you say? What would you say as a suggestion for them?
But I can think of a lot of things I would say, but one very practical suggestion that I would say they should start on immediately is go out and do something for somebody else. Whether you, I mean, it could be working at a soup kitchen or something like that, but anything.
What if somebody just can't seem to muster up the energy to do that?
Yeah, somehow I would try to motivate them to get that done, because I think what we then find, once we're turned in on ourselves, it's like a black hole. We just go deeper and deeper and deeper. But once we help someone else, it's easy for us to see our value. It's easy for us. Not that the value's not there if we're not helping someone, because you could be, I don't know, a quadriplegic who's catatonic or whatever, and you still have value just because you are a human being. You're in the image and likeness of God. However, we lose sight of that. And so what do we do to regain sight of that? Help others. And you start to see your value. You start to see the benefit. And especially when you're talking about people who are getting dumped, right?
I'm not sure if value is a problem. I mean, it might be for some. I'll give you that. But I think that some might honestly see themselves as valuable, but still feel, I don't see any other avenue to happiness.
Then the avenue that they had taken, which turned out to be a dead end?
Yes.
Yeah, I would. Okay. So I would say, go out and help people.
Yeah.
And sometimes that alone will actually open up a new avenue for you. The other way of doing it is just simply trying to dialogue to convince them that they have value. However, I think it's much more palpable. It's much more convincing if you actually engage, if you actually do something to help other people. Like, think of the person who gets dumped, but they're utterly alone, right? Well, okay, the scenario, you said a divorce scenario. Person's divorced. Let's say they get divorced and they have no kids.
Okay.
Their entire life was their spouse, right? Now their spouse is gone. Why get out of bed in the morning? What do they have to get out of bed for?
Right. What do they see to get out of bed for?
Right. Yeah. But if you have kids,
right,
no matter how depressed you are about your spouse being gone, you know you have to get up and do what you have to do for those kids, right?
Yeah.
So let's say you don't have the kids.
Right.
Do something for somebody else, right? Again,
an example?
The cliche is, you know, go work at a soup kitchen or go. Oh, my goodness. If you just Googled, I don't know, volunteer opportunities, you would be inundated, because most of the people that utilize volunteers don't have any money. This is why they're using volunteers. So they always need help. And, you know, I have a friend who works at the Pine Street Inn, which is a homeless shelter, and they do unbelievable work.
Now that we're coming closer to the holidays and people are remembering loved ones that have died, or you know, divorces or whatever pain they may be going through themselves, you're saying is the number one answer to alleviating this and is to get out of yourself, to pick up that phone or to go on the internet and secure a place where you could go to volunteer yourself to help others.
Yeah.
Didn't Fulton Sheen say something similar to that?
I don't know.
Does that ring a bell? Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure he did.
I don't know. But I believe that. Yeah. And I would also say this. I think what happens when you suffer loss is you question, like you said, the guy who always thought he was going to have one career or get a certain promotion or whatever and is realizing I'm never going to get it.
Yeah.
He's going to look at himself and say, you know, what is wrong with me? Right? And I think what's happening there is that you might have misapplied your gifts, your talents, your faculties, your strengths in pursuing a goal that maybe you were not made for in the first place.
And all of a sudden you're in middle age and you're saying to yourself, I blew it.
Yeah.
I blew life.
Right.
I don't have children. I'm probably too old. I may never find a wife.
Yeah.
I blew it.
Yeah.
So then what do you say to somebody like that? Would you say that God can take where you are now and bring you to a place of fulfillment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
regardless of what you've missed?
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it's. Do you remember the early days of GPS?
Yes.
Where you would get, you would take a wrong turn, or you would, you know, defy the GPS and go your own way. Yeah. And then all, 5 seconds later, it would say recalibrating.
Recalculating. Or recalibrating.
Yeah, recalculating. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. You're right. Recalculating. So it was finding a new way for you to get to your goal. Mm. Right? Your destiny. Your destination.
So are you saying that God is like a cosmic GPS system?
Yes. We get, you know, there's a straight line from point A to point B, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We make it a zigzag line. But no matter which zig or zag we take, God still knows how to get us to point B.
So what is the ultimate destination of point B? What is it?
Well, ultimately, it's eternal life. It's heaven.
Okay.
It's eternal life with God, I should
say. Okay, so then you're saying that some people who wake up and see themselves saying, it's too late for me to realize any of my basic dreams in life, these people can be recalculated into a situation where they actually will end up in total and complete happiness?
You know, I think when we believe that we make our dreams God, we have to serve our dreams. We have to devote ourselves to our dreams. But if our dreams aren't really what we're made for, even though that's kind of what we want, right? Like, I want to eat, you know, 4 or 5 Klondike bars every night.
But is it possible that you yourself blew what you were made for?
Yes. It's absolutely possible. Yes.
So in situations like that, God as a divine GPS system, you would say, as an analogy, would take you from point A and lead you into a point B, right?
Yes.
And that could be satisfying also. Is that
what
you're saying?
In other words, there are many paths to the destination, and God is on all of them. He's going to get you. He's going to do everything he can to get you to heaven.
So we might blow it some of the easier paths, like you know, if the GPS originally said go from point A to point B and it'll take you a half hour, and we say nah, I'm too because of pride or sin or what have you, I'm gonna do this and this because I want this,
right?
And then eventually you find yourself, you know, way off in the woods and you're a little lost. And it's taken an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours.
Right.
You're saying if you trust in God as that, again, that analogous GPS system, if you trust in him, he will bring you out of the woods and into the sunlight, into another place, and you will eventually get there, even though you may have blown some of the original routes to get there.
Yeah, God has plan A. He creates us with all our characteristics, all our gifts, faculties, talents, whatever, for plan A.
Okay.
If I screw up plan A so badly, he's still going to have a plan B for me.
Where How about a C, D, and E?
It's going to go all the way to Z, right? I mean, and beyond, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be whatever it takes because, you know, there's this ancient, it's not a Christian expression, but an ancient Latin expression, dum spiro spero. As long as I'm breathing, there's hope. While I breathe, I hope, it literally means.
All right. Now, everything you say makes absolutely perfect sense if you are a theist and if you believe in life after death.
Yeah, right.
Correct?
Yes.
All right. So then, hope is in God. You really can't, I mean, you don't want, to those who aren't religious, that might sound like a very religious thing to say, but if you just use human reason, we know that there is no fulfillment and satisfaction from this life.
Right.
Every novel, every story that has ever been written or lived can tell you that people are not fulfilled, that happily ever after does not occur in this life.
You know, even when people are at the end of their life or towards the end of their life and they're saying things like, I lived a good life.
Yeah.
And you ask them, you know, well, you know, tell me about your life or give me some pointers or whatever. You're always going to get them talking about the things they regret or they wish they had done differently or something like that. So even if at the end you could say, well, you know what? The net result is that it was a good life. But man, did I have some bumps in the road.
And also, I think what you said a little earlier is so true that – when you achieve or receive what you've wanted for a long time, it gets boring, it gets old relatively shortly.
Yeah.
These things of this world, no matter how excitement they may seem when they're in the future, when we attain them, they're just like anything else.
You know, and
it's
this
like,
is...
It's like the little kid that's so excited about his Christmas present. When he gets it, after a week, he's bored with it and he moves on.
Exactly. And you know what? I would say, you know, in your analogies that you asked me to address when someone, you know, the boyfriend breaks up or the husband leaves or the job, two out of the three you mentioned had to do with marriage.
Yeah.
And but the phenomenon that you just mentioned is plaguing marriage, because people think, I'm going to get married, and it's going to be like Cinderella and Prince Charming.
Yeah.
Do I have the right couple? Is that who
Cinderella, Prince Charming,
or
yes.
Prince Charming.
With the slipper. Cinderella has the slipper, yeah.
Yeah, is that Prince Charming?
Well, I think Prince Charming is he involved in Sleeping Beauty, too?
I don't know, but you get
well,
the point.
Well, there's at least a prince there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, people think that you ride off into the sunset and you just have this permagrin for the rest of your life.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
And so the reality of marriage, though, is just like the reality of an individual. We have good days and bad days. We have good moods and we have bad moods. And we have, you know, we have strengths and we have weaknesses. And when you combine two people, you just have doubly so. And so what happens in marriage is very often is that people, the honeymoon's over, as they say, and now what? Yeah. What do you do? Where is happiness?
Look,
if it's not that quote-unquote happily ever after?
The bottom line is we're out of Eden.
Yeah.
We've been out of Eden as a human race for a long time.
Right.
And just like the tree, the forbidden tree is named, all of us experience good and evil. Every day of our life, no matter whether we're married, single, whether we're rich or poor,
now,
we all experience both good and evil in this life.
I will do you one better.
Do me one. Do me two better.
Eden.
Yes.
The word Eden actually means delight, the garden of delight.
Right.
But we weren't even made for Eden. We were made for something better than the Garden of Eden. And had we been content with the Garden of Eden, or had we settled for the Garden of Eden, we would eventually have been discontented. We would not have been content with the Garden of Eden alone. We were made for heaven. And the Garden of Eden was just our, what do you want to say, launching pad to heaven. If the devil came in and tempted us and we said, go to hell, Satan, we would have assumed heaven at that point.
Well, there's a big theological discussion to go along with that, because then where would the rest of the human race be, and would you exist, and would I exist, and all of that good stuff.
Sure.
So that's for another show.
So, but what I would say about that is that's God recalculating, like the GPS again. Note, we blew it in the Garden of Eden, so we recalculate, and God shifts to Plan B, which is why you have in the Old Testament covenant after covenant after like.
Yes.
Every once in a while, God will come back and say, okay, let's make a new agreement, but you're really going to stick to it this time, right?
Okay. We have 5 minutes left.
We never got a break tonight.
No, we didn't.
We've been on
whatever,
a roll.
Whatever Cindy did, I hope she can remember it and do it again.
Well, you know what it is that we just haven't given her the opportunity to take a break.
Well, I don't know if that means anything.
But it was really just that it made sense to do the entire break at the beginning because Kent wasn't really.
I was late.
I like that.
I was late.
Yeah. So maybe if you're late again, we'll have no break.
All right.
Well, what do you mean maybe? I know
what's
you're going to be late again.
I will never be late ever again.
You're always late. But just a couple minutes left. How would you? What else can we say about this very important topic? Because I know a lot of people are suffering. And I'll repeat the topic again just to jog your intellect.
Yeah.
What to do when dreams are shattered and hope seems lost?
I would say serve. Find a way to serve the needs of others. And you don't have to have great skill. I know my sister many, many years ago volunteered at a home for babies born addicted to drugs.
Hmm.
And all they wanted people to do was hold a baby and rock in a rocking chair. That's it.
So then are you saying that you're happier when you love than when you are loved?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's It's a cycle.
Yeah.
You know, the more you love, the more you feel loved.
But here's the challenge, of course, is if you've been rejected.
Yeah.
And you're feeling very unloved.
That cycle's and disrupted.
And yeah. you don't like yourself at the moment.
Yeah.
You feel horrible.
Right.
How do you then muster up the energy to say, okay, I'm going to go hug some babies?
It's an act of the will. You have to. It's an act of willpower. You have to say, I'm going to do this. I'm going to trust this. I'm going to have faith in this principle that helping others alleviates my suffering.
And of course, you could ask God to help you too.
Exactly. Absolutely. Because this is why God put us here, right? We might end up in one of those dead ends. Which God might have, that might have been part of God's plan A all along, so that we hit that dead end, we have this revelation that, oh my goodness, I need to get outside
of
myself.
Get back on track.
I need to get outside of myself. I need to help some other people. I've been so selfish. I've been so self-centered.
I think you hit on another good point, and that is that very often our sufferings, even though they seem at the moment to be meaningless, are extremely meaningful in as much as... If you didn't suffer, if you didn't hit that dead end, if you weren't dumped, you may have ended up in hell for all eternity because your will and your heart was going in a very bad direction at the time.
I have to say that recently, as I was struggling with something and I was in prayer about it, and I rarely get what I feel like is a response to my prayers.
Okay.
I throw a prayer up. And I feel like I get something back. And very recently, I was praying about a difficult situation, and what I got was an image of Christ dying on the cross and the words, "You have to bleed." In other words, God is saying to me, the solution is in the suffer.
There you go. And the happily ever after is heaven.
Is on the other side of it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, going beneath the surface on this topic of shattered dreams and suffering.
And 70s pop songs.
There is hope, even if you can't see it. Know that it's there. Thank you for listening. Have a great... I guess we'll be here before Christmas. But have a good... If you're Christian, have a good beginning of Advent. Have a great week. Cindy's Vinyl Vault coming up.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer, Fanley and Jaminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY. That's Learn, the number 2, pray, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.